Welcome to the Between the Lines podcast, a weekly literary author interview program produced by WABE Atlanta.
Lisa C's first book, On Gold Mountain, was a national bestseller. It told of her 100-year-old great-grandfather, who was godfather of L.A.'s Chinatown. This bestseller was followed by several others, Flower Net, The Interior, and Dragon Bones, all highly acclaimed. Hi, I'm Valerie Jackson, and today we're going between the lines of Lisa C's latest book, Snowflower and the Secret Fan, a detailed description of 19th century Chinese women who suffered the excruciating pain of foot binding, spend their lives basically confined to female quarters, kowtowing to elders, and communicating in an ancient secret language. This is absolutely a fascinating read, and I'm delighted to welcome Lisa C.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really did enjoy this. I learned so much about the early 19th century Chinese culture. Snowflower and the Secret Fan tells of a time in the 19th century where it was better to have a dog than a daughter. The narrator, Lily, has her feet bound at age 7. Describe the society and the rural community at this time and tell us about the practice of foot binding, how and why it started.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that that saying, it's better to have a dog than a daughter, even I grew up hearing that as a child in my Chinese American family.
Mm.
And, you know, this
and
is
you're a young woman.
Yes, I am. Well, I'm not as young maybe as I could be. But, you know, my cousins and I, we heard all of that. And we, you know, other sayings like, when a daughter, obey your father, when a wife, obey your husband, when a widow, obey your son. And we heard all of this, and we resisted it, and we fought against it, and we rebelled. But no matter what, you know, a little bit of that sinks in. So when I thought about these women in China and how hard they had lived and what a terrible experience that they'd had, I guess I was really inspired to write this. These women in this one area, actually across China, were illiterate for about 1,000 years. For about 1,000 years, they also had their feet bound. And as you said, this happened at an age around 7 years old, when a mother would take her daughter's feet, wrap the toes underneath, wrap them in these long strips of cloth, and then make this little girl walk back and forth across what was known as the woman's chamber. It was a room upstairs in the parents' house that had just one window to look out of. And they would make this girl walk back and forth week after week after week until finally her bones broke and her toes. And then they would make her walk some more. And then the mother would take those loose bones, pull them under the foot, folding the foot over, 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 tightening those bindings every 4 days until, you know, after, again, weeks and weeks and weeks of walking back and forth across this room, the bones in the midfoot would break. So the goal was for the toes of the foot to come back and meet the heel of the foot so that all that a little girl and then later as a woman would be left to walk on was basically her big toe.
There's a passage that describes that binding. Would you read that for us, please, Theo?
Certainly. All I knew was that foot binding would make me more marriageable and therefore bring me closer to the greatest love and greatest joy in a woman's life, a son. To that end, my goal was to achieve a pair of perfectly bound feet with 7 distinct attributes. They should be small, narrow, straight, pointed, and arched, yet still fragrant and soft in texture. Of these requirements, length is the most important. 7 centimeters, about the length of a thumb, is the ideal. Shape comes next. A perfect foot should be shaped like the bud of a lotus. It should be full and round at the heel, come to a point at the front, with all the weight borne by the big toe alone. This means that the toes and the arch of the foot must be broken and bent under to meet the heel. Finally, the cleft formed by the forefoot and heel should be deep enough to hide a large cash piece perpendicularly within its fold. If I could attain all that, happiness would be my reward.
Whoa. That must be more difficult than childbirth.
Oh, about 1,000 times more difficult, I would think.
In the opening, Lily, who is the narrator, is remembering her, you know, own experience, and she said, quote, "The binding altered not only my feet, but my whole character." How were the girls impacted mentally and emotionally by this?
Well, you know, they had gone through this excruciating pain as small girls, and it's hard to imagine a mother doing that to her daughter, but also a daughter sitting still for it. And the reason mothers did it was the one thing that a mother could do to give her daughter a better chance at life. She could give her daughter a perfect pair of bound feet.
Where do you think that came from, that wanting to have that perfect 3-inch, you know,
well,
length?
It actually started, you know, 1,000 years ago in the courtesan culture. There was this one dancer who wrapped her feet to make them look smaller. And it was said she looked like she had little fox feet. She didn't break her bones. She just wrapped them to make them look smaller. It was then kind of picked up in the courtesan culture. And then the wives at home started thinking, you know, I'd like my husband to come home. And that's how it made the transition into the larger culture.
Interesting.
But yeah, as you were saying, you know, this foot binding, you know, not only put a very small girl through this period of excruciating pain that lasted about 2 years, it really did change their personalities, because from that time on, while they could walk, they couldn't walk very far. They were really then left to live in almost total isolation.
Upstairs in the woman's quarters.
Upstairs in that room with just this one window to look out of. So, and then when they were 17, they married out to their husbands' homes in another village, sight unseen, into an arranged marriage, where they moved upstairs into that woman's chamber, again with just one window to look out of, and there they would remain until they died.
And actually, they stay at home until after their first child.
Right.
They don't even go and live with the husbands.
No, they only, for the first 3 years, they sort of go and visit their husbands.
The conjugal rights.
Yes,
right?
The conjugal rights.
Four times
a
year.
That's about it. But then they would be allowed to go home.
And I read you mentioned that 1 in 10 girls would die from this.
Right. And then, of course, many more were crippled and hobbled and really weren't able to walk.
Is it still legal? Is it still practiced?
No, it was outlawed in 1911. But this area that I'm writing about was so remote that they didn't hear about it. They didn't hear that Mao had taken over the country in 1949. They didn't hear either of those things till 1952.
The story really centers around a friendship, two girls who become friends when they're 6 years old. And there's a special name for this friendship in the book. It's pronounced
Lao Tung.
Lao Tung.
Yes, it means old sames.
Old
sames.
Almost like old souls that are similar or something. Let's talk about that a minute. Tell about that special friendship and describe that custom.
Okay, again, in just this one very remote area, Jianyang County, when a girl was having her feet bound, already matchmakers were coming and looking for little girls in this village to match to other little boys in other villages. And sometimes the mother would pull the matchmaker aside and say, "Can you find another little girl in another village who can match 8 characteristics, born on the same day, in the same birth order, with the exact same size foot, 8 things it had to match, obviously, very hard to find. But if that other little girl could be found, they'd be brought together and they would sign a contract becoming Lao Tong, old sames, which was kind of like a best friend relationship for life.
Like bosom buddies.
But I actually also thought of it a little bit like an emotional marriage, because these girls, and then later as women, when they married, love was not in the equation. You know, and one of the things about these women was that no one expected them to have an intellectual thought. No one expected them to be creative in any way. No one expected or wanted them to show any type of emotion. And yet through this special kind of relationship, and also through the secret language, they were able to express all of that.
You mentioned the secret language, Nushu, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the third, really, the part of the book that I think is very significant. That whole level of communication, why did that start? the new shoe, which was really, they called the secret language of women.
Well, again, that story goes back about 1,000 years to a woman that historically did exist. The emperor came to this area, met a farmer whose daughter was very well educated, could read and write in traditional Chinese. And he thought, geez, I'll take her back to the palace as a concubine. And although she was very talented in the countryside, once she got to the palace, they looked at her as kind of a country bumpkin. Mm-hmm. She was very lonely, very sad. And she wanted to write home to her mother and sisters to talk about how sad her life was. And she knew that if she wrote in standard Chinese, she'd, you know, be thrown into the well or, you know, some really severe punishment. And so she invented this secret language to communicate with her mother and sisters. And then from there, it was just passed on and developed, again, in just this one very remote county.
So it became a way for the young women to continue to communicate
to
with
communicate,
their
even
with
though
their
they
families.
Lived and with their friends and with their Lao Tong, their
so
old
So how would
their
messages be sent back and forth?
There were really three ways. The first would be if a woman from one village was traveling back to visit her family in her home village, she would gather up all the letters from that her husband's village and take them to her home village. There was also another type of girl called a little daughter-in-law, and this would be a girl who had refused to have her feet bound, or maybe her parents didn't know how to bind feet, and so at age 7 she'd be sold to another family where she would be called a little daughter-in-law, basically like a servant or a slave. So those little girls, because they had big feet, could run back and forth between villages. And then the last way, and the most common way, was by matchmakers. They were the postal service. And these were women who had been widowed. They weren't like other women. They did business with men, arranging marriages, and they traveled from village to village. In their travels, they would take letters and drop them off.
I know that in this one, Madam Wang?
Mm-hmm.
She had her feet bound.
Yes, they did have bound feet. But the thing is, you know, people with bound feet, women with bound feet, could walk more than you would expect.
There were special rules, though, that govern the writing, did it not, in terms of there were standard phrases that would be repeated?
Right. Well, there were phrases like, a pair of Mandarin ducks mated for life. This would describe the Lao Tong relationship, this old same relationship, or that they would be like two trees that stand 1,000 years.
And Snowflower would frequently use that phrase in her poetry to Lily.
Right. And there are only about 175 pieces of old Nushu, letters, songs, stories, autobiographies that have survived. Mm. And so I used those to really call on that language to use in this novel, because the language was so evocative and so full of emotion. And I think that these women, because they lived in such isolation, everything was turned inward, you know, and so their emotions were so heightened, and yet they also had this part of them that wanted to kind of fly out of that window. And so there's a lot about birds and flight and floating on clouds and things like this, this deep desire that they almost couldn't express by saying, I really want out of this room, but they could express in terms of wanting to fly across the sky.
Now, Lily and Snowflower, who were the two bosom buddies, if you will, started sending this fan back and forth that I think Snowflower started with. Describe that fan and tell how you send a message. Where do you write it? Is it in the seam? Is it in the...
Well, I had them write in the folds. So each fold of the fan would have a message. These girls wrote the most important moments of their life, of their lives together. Births, marriages, deaths, famines, war.
Almost like a family Bible.
But almost, exactly. I thought of that because in our family we have a very, a family Bible that goes back about 150 years, and you can go back and see all of these things. And so they trade it back and forth, especially if one woman needs it more than another at a particular time, as a kind of a comfort.
Right, Right. Well, if you've just joined us, I'm Valerie Jackson, and I'm going between the lines of Snowflower and the Secret Fan, a novel of 19th century China life for young girls sequestered in upstairs women's quarters, often until after their firstborn child. The author, Lisa C. Let me just ask you this. Many of the activities carried on before or just prior to the weddings seem to be sectioned off into days, certain mm-hmm. days, the day sitting and singing days.
You know, in this area, the marriage, days leading up to the marriage actually lasted about 7 years.
Wow.
Of various activities and moments. And then that last month before the wedding, every day was set aside for something in particular. So there would be a day, for example, when the mother would sit on the third stair.
The day of sorrow and worry.
Yes, and mm-hmm. she would sit on this third stair. Her daughter would sit behind her, and all of the women in that family and other women from the village would come, and they would sing these songs of sorrow that their daughter was leaving them and that they might not see her again.
Now that's interesting, considering the daughter was thought so little of.
Yes, but here's the thing. In the Chinese tradition, you raise a girl for another family. That's how they view it. She's not part of your family. Hmm. She isn't in the ancestor tree. She isn't in the ancestor temple of your family, the one she's born into. She only appears in the ancestral temple of her husband's family. So raised by, you know, the natal family for this other family, they tried not to love these girls because they were seen as temporary visitors in the household, just temporary.
So they didn't want to get too attached.
Right. And yet, how could they not? Even in the most dire circumstances, you can't prevent parents from loving their children. And so often in Nushu, in this secret language, you would see these phrases like, I was like a pearl in my father's hand. Mm-hmm. For in that moment, mm-hmm. I was like a pearl in my father's hand, or I was like a pearl in my mother's hand. That they could feel precious and loved on occasion, but really everything was set up so that they wouldn't experience mm-hmm. that.
That Nushu was not just a secret language. It seems to have been really a vehicle for a voice.
Yes.
That they weren't able to really have otherwise.
That's right.
Do you think that was compensation for having been constantly so belittled growing up, you know, that they seek this refuge in this
I think so. I mm-hmm. think, again, it's human nature. Mm-hmm. Even in the worst circumstances, people want to be heard. You know, certainly during the days of slavery in this country, you know, there were drums, there were spirituals, there were quilts that people would tell their stories in these quilts. You know, people can say, you can't be heard, and yet that human desire is so strong. Mm-hmm. And so these women, you know, a lot of what they wrote about was the misery of their lives. You know, they didn't hold back. They really didn't hold back.
One of the most interesting characters to me was Madame Wang, the matchmaker. What was the status of the matchmaker? Was she respected?
I don't think those women were respected. I mean, these were women whose husbands had died. A widow was one who has not yet died. And so that last period of a woman's life was called sitting quietly. And she was just supposed to sit quietly and wait to die and meet her husband.
Once her husband died?
Mm-hmm. But actually, for a lot of these women, that was the time when their lives really improved.
Hello.
Of course. They were then raised to the most important person in the household. They had attained that by outliving their husband, by outliving their mothers-in-law. They were now the most important woman in the household anyway.
Well, let's talk about Lily and Snowflower just a little bit, because the part of the subject of the story is their friendship and how it kind of went astray. And it was really about miscommunication, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, haven't we all experienced that? And I think we've all had friends somewhere along the line where you can, you know, maybe that other person does something and you don't like it, but you forgive it. And then something else happens and, okay, you'll overlook it this time. And something else, and you go along like that, and then all of a sudden there comes a day when that's it. And maybe it's over something that's totally insignificant. For them, for these women, it happens with this secret language. There's a misunderstanding that happens in the secret language, in a message that's sent on the fan. I really wanted to write about female friendship. I think in some ways it's even more of a secret than the secret language. Mm. It's something that we don't really talk about very much.
What do you mean it's more a secret than the secret language?
Well, I think as women we've all experienced it. But when you think about all of the novels that are out there, there are very few that really deal with the depth of female friendship. There are a lot of fun books we read on the plane or we read on the beach, but not really about the depth of female friendship.
And the books are usually talking about friends talking about their men or whatever, as opposed to the relationship
to each other. And I think part of that has to do with our kind of discomfort and talking about love, but also our limit or our limitations in English with the word love. Mm. In English, we can say, you know, I love my husband, I love my children, but I also love hamburgers and I love ice cream. You use that same word. In Chinese, there are words that convey gratitude love, pity love, respectful love, all things we've experienced. Mother love. Mother love is composed of two characters. One part means love, the other part means pain. That's a mother's love. Mm. And so I use that, and then I personally think that wherever there's love, eventually sneaking in at some point is going to be regret. Because who among us can get through life without having regrets? Mm. And so I thought a lot about my own family, actually, as I was writing this and some of the regrets that they had, that my grandmother and great aunt had, and that I wanted to see if there was a way that maybe I could heal some of those regrets.
At the end, Lily is chastised by Snowflower's
sworn sisters.
Now, what's the difference between a sworn sister now and a
Lautong,
Lautong?
The Sworn Sisterhood was a group of maybe 5 to 7 women who would gather to embroider and write new shoe together. But it was not as close of a relationship. It was a bunch of girlfriends.
Almost like a sorority.
Yeah, you know, a bunch of girlfriends as opposed to one best friend. And part of this misunderstanding between Lily and Snowflower has to do with these sworn sisters. And so those sworn sisters then at the end really are able to point out to Lily, who by this time has become the most important woman in the county, her defects and the terrible thing that she can finally understand the terrible hurt she caused Snowflower. And so then the end is, you know, the next 40 years, which is just the last chapter, has to do with how this old woman, Lily, then goes back to try to remedy these terrible mistakes that she made in life.
One of the lines that struck me near the end, when the Sworn Sisters were talking to Lily, one of them said, "You had too much man thinking in you. You loved her as a man would, valuing her only for following men's rules." What did they mean by that?
I think that Lily has a male possessiveness when it comes to Snowflower. But also, the way that Lily approached her life, she was chosen as a very young girl to have her feet bound to be perfect. They could tell that these were going to be perfect feet. And that if she could have these perfect feet, she could become the most important woman in the county. And she bought into it, you know, you could say hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that I kept thinking of her, of that binding on her feet as continuing to wrap its way up until it wrapped even around her heart. Mm. And that she so followed all of those rules about what it meant to be a daughter, what it meant to be a wife, what it meant to be a widow, that's why she had all that man thinking, that it became thinking that really had to do with the outer realm, with appearances, as opposed to the inner realm, which was about the truth of emotion.
Actually, many women are still dealing with that today without the bound feet.
Oh,
they're
yes.
bound in other ways.
Oh, I think we all are bound in other ways. Yes, I
Whether
think
it's career or...
Career and family and the war and the economy and events outside of our control like the environment, you know, what happened, natural disasters.
Right.
Yes, I think we're very much bound up.
Before we run out of time, I want to ask you about the other writing mentioned in the book. We talked about Nushu, the secret writing that women did. Talk about men's writing. How did the men write back then? Women were not allowed to
learn standard Chinese. And, you know, we haven't talked about this. You know, Nushu is the only written language to have been found anywhere in the world to have been used exclusively by women. And it looks very different from standard Chinese. Standard Chinese is very square. The strokes are quite thick and heavy. But Nushu is very long and thin. It's kind of wispy. It's been described as looking like mosquito legs or like bird prints in sand. That it's just this very delicate, very, well, very feminine written language.
There are only like about 600 characters in Nushu, but what, 50,000 or more for the men?
Right, but one of the great things about Nushu was that it was phonetically based. So you could just learn 600 characters so that then you could express the entire language.
Lily recounts an old saying that warns, a woman without knowledge is better than a woman with an education. What did she mean by that?
That was a Confucian saying.
What did he mean by that?
Well, just exactly what he said. He felt that women really shouldn't be educated. They shouldn't have knowledge. They should be just limited to the women's chambers, that they should never venture out, not just physically, but mentally as well. That there was this inside realm for women and an outer realm for men.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. All I can say is this has been a fascinating conversation, and the book is even more so. Thank you for joining us today, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
Lisa C's latest book is Snowflower and the Secret Fan. To learn more about the books and authors featured on Between the Lines, listen to an archived program, or subscribe to a podcast of the show, visit our website at wabe.org. Join us next week for another engaging program, because there's always more to learn when you go between the lines. The executive producer of this program is Lois Reitzes. Producer and editor Marjorie Lancer. Technical producer Ken Murray. Production assistant Chi-Chi Morka. Opening and closing music by Afro Blue. And I'm your host, Valerie Jackson. Funding for this program is provided in part by the Fulton County Board of Commissioners under the guidance of the Fulton County Arts Council. Between the Lines is a production of WABE Atlanta.